Hello, Terri-Anne. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Eloise. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I am good.
Good.
Yeah. Excellent.
I hope everyone at home's good as well.
Same here. And if they're not, maybe our talk is going to support everyone. I'm trying to make the camera. All right. So, we were thinking of talking about compassion versus caring. I'm trying to get the camera angle. Sorry, everybody. My camera is playing games on me. I have to move it all the time. All right. So I'm Terri-Anne Nikitas, and this is Eloise Ansel on my phone. And we're going to kind of go through a little bit about compassion and caring. So, yeah, I usually like to start with a question. So maybe I'll question you. What are your thoughts about caring?
Caring. Well, I think my thoughts on that word have changed a lot over the years. But caring now sometimes feels a little manipulative to me.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I think that's something that's really evolved. So
why does it feel manipulative?
Well, if I care for you, like, oh, I really care for you, I really want to help you, I'm normally trying to inflict my model of the world on you.
Yeah.
I think I'm trying to make you feel better and make things better, but I'm probably trying to force you into my model of the world.
Or even if I care about you and my model of the world is going on, I'm going to care for you in the way I think you should be cared for, so I can feel better. Meanwhile, we don't even listen. We don't even know what's going on with the individual. Usually we don't listen. I mean, it blows me away, you know, that so many people think that they're caring. And I don't know about you, but you can send out an email. You can have people look over that email. You can make sure it's super clear. I mean, I look over emails. I have somebody who looks it over for me, making sure it's clear and clarifying in the most simple language possible. And the person can't hear me.
Yeah.
They've read it in their own way.
And we're always going to do that because we're always filtering through our beliefs and our perceptions of the world. And we're looking for subtext.
I would say we're going to do that till we don't.
Yeah, true.
It's a little bit, because if I understand that, you know, I have a model of my world, as you said, you understand you have a model of the world, then you can kind of say, well, I can step back from it. I don't need to listen to it. I can step back and actually listen to the other. To me, it's just sitting in awareness and aware of what's going on. And then I can ask, my curiosity can come up. You know, or a person might just say, listen to me. I don't need you to fix it.
Yes.
But usually we jump to fixing it and we think that's caring.
Yes. Yeah, true.
Yeah, instead of just listen. And if somebody says, how do I resolve it? You can give them a solution, and oftentimes they might not be able to even understand the solution or even consider it because they're very involved in their own model. And they say, yes, I know that solution, but I can't do it because I feel guilty. I can't do it because nobody's going to like it. So they're externally oriented. They're not putting themselves first, because the primary answer I get when you ask what happens when you put yourself first, well, I'm selfish. And yet we don't see the selfishness in the manipulation you talked about.
Yeah.
Right? It's my model. I think what's going on. I think if I don't follow my model, then I'm selfish.
Mm.
Right? Mm. Right? So, and it's completely selfish to follow your own model.
Yeah.
Not that I need to follow anyone else's model either.
No, there is no right and wrong.
Yeah, or even find their solution within their model.
Yeah.
Right? Because somebody might say, well, here's my model. This is how I see the world. This is selfish. So I have to do this, which is going to hurt me. And I don't want to do it. Like even just meeting up with someone. I have to meet up with this person. That's my model of the world. If somebody asks me to meet up with them, I have to do it. And the only way I can get out of it is if I lie.
Mm. It's bonkers.
It really is crazy making, isn't it?
Yeah.
We consistently follow something that has nothing to do with. This is what I think is real rebellion, you know, is to really see what it is I am experiencing in the present. And I'm honest about what I'm experiencing. Not how I experience you. I think that's dishonest. Does that make sense?
Can you say that again? My brain went.
Well, if I think something about you within my own model, I really like what you brought up, my own model. So if I experience you in a particular way in my model and I say, this is how I'm experiencing you, I think you're pushy. I think you should change so that I feel better, right? That's not honest.
Mm.
Honest is, I don't feel like going out today. And that sounds so easy, but for many people, that's impossible. They will deliberate for years on that.
Yeah.
You know, because at some point there's also a friendship one can have and you might have to dump them as you change. Right? As we shift and change, we often think, oh, I shifted, so now this relationship should shift. Well, it can, but it could be mean you shift out of the relationship. So yeah. The honesty could be I'm no longer this person's friend, but I'm not going to, I don't necessarily say I'm not your friend. I did it years ago. My friends, you know, they as we got to our 30s, they were still going out to dinner and then they'd go to a bar for a drink and socialize. And I was going to Tibetan temples. I was doing Buddhist research. I was meditating. Okay, so I changed a lot.
Yeah.
Right? So I changed right out of the friendship, you know, and they said, their answer was, you're weird now and just come out with us. And I said, no, you can come with me. So it turned out that, instead of directly saying, no, you and I don't have the same interests, I could say that, this, which I did. These are my interests. You are invited to come. Yeah. So come.
Yeah.
Just come. Oh, you don't want to? Well, that's your choice. And I don't want to come with you, which is exactly what I said. So it's honest.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying you're weird. I'm not turning around to critique your way of life. That's what you like to do. You go out to dinner, you have a drink, and you socialize with your friends. It's lovely. If that's what you want to do. Yeah. But for me, it wasn't what I wanted to do. So it was just, oh, okay. I have nothing against what you're doing, but I'm doing something else.
Yeah.
And you are completely welcome. No, you're weird. So I wouldn't say that to them, that they're weird, because they're not changing. Mm. They say, well, I've grown in a different direction. or I've moved into a different direction. I'm making different choices, things that interest me, and you don't want to come along. So now the friendship obviously separated.
Yeah. And that's just life.
It is just life, but we find it very difficult to come to that honest place, don't we?
Yeah.
You know, you can deliberate over, oh my God, they're doing this, and why isn't she coming along, and does she hate me, and, you know, oh, but she's weird, or whatever, instead of just saying, no, we're going in different directions.
Yeah.
And we're both welcoming each other. I was welcomed to what they were doing, and they were, and I was welcoming them to what I was doing.
Yeah.
Right? It's quite simple. But, and it could be, you know, that's a sort of bigger transition in life where you've grown in a, or you've moved in a different direction. You're making different choices in your life. But sometimes it's little simple things like I have to go and meet someone and I should do it. And now I'm going to have to lie to get out of it. I'm going to stress that I lied and I'm going to stress that something's wrong with me and I'm going to, because I should go.
Yeah.
I should do this, but I'm not. And I've seen people deliberate. It could be years where they keep going through the same thing.
Yeah, you can see people getting into situations where they like, oh, but they still see them. It's bonkers. I'm remembering a moment. We were sat in a cafe when you were here in Reading, back where I live. And you said to me that you once walked out whilst you were having a coffee with a friend. You just anymore, and you got up and walked off. And you were telling me the story, and I was like, "You can do that." It's just like this whole like whole new world opened up to me. I'm like, "Oh, yeah, you don't have to stay, do you?"
Yeah, that was one of my literally weird moments. Like, I'm done. I just don't want to do this.
Yeah.
Okay,
I
bye.
Feel it's so liberating. It's like, right, you know.
Yep, I'm done. Let's go. Yeah. It really is a, and you know, it is a like a rock and a hard place, right? Because we're so used to our habits and our rules or models, as you said, and we think that's exactly how we should live. And we live within our own confines, literally of a prison camp.
Mm.
You know, when we keep in the gulags, they used to make the prisoners who were starving carry rocks from one side to the other. There was no purpose. They just made them do it. Right?
Yeah.
And you know, it's horrible. It's terrible. But we often do that to ourselves. We're just carrying one rock and then we carry it back and forth because that's the rule.
Yeah. And we don't question it. We just go with it.
No, we don't. We don't question it. We don't look and see whether there is a place to be free, you know, which was in my teen years. That was all I wanted, was freedom from the internal conflict. There had to be a way to get out of that internal conflict. There had to be a way to do that. And of course, I searched for decades to find a way out. And I tried so many different ways, right? Like trying to meditate, you know, in my 20s, meditating 8 hours a day. And I came to this moment where nothing was triggering me. And my mom was coming home. She was living away from Montreal and she came home. And I was kind of proud of what I had achieved. And I knew the moment I felt the pride that something, you know, the pride before the fall. And I could almost feel that ominous feeling. But I went over, still with my smile. And I'm like, hey, Mom. And she goes, what's wrong? And in one fell swoop, I was triggered. And just everything shattered at my illusion. And at that point, I was 32 years old by then. So I'd been meditating 8 hours a day for about a decade. And in that moment, I just realized it was just an illusion that I had created, right? Because we can create such a coping mechanism, even through meditation or, you know, chanting, because it's blissful. It is blissful, but it doesn't mean we've dealt with the identification process, right? Because we identify things. There's a, like you said, there's the model, but within the model, I'm highly identified with something. Like for me, I'm selfless. So no matter who asks me out, I'm going to go out because I'm selfless. And if I don't go out with them, then I'm going to be selfish. Right. So then they're caught. You know, one of the big catch-22s I love is when someone's invited somewhere and the friend that you've, let's say you agree to go with a friend. And this actually happened to me. I had two friends and unbeknownst to me, one of them hated the other. Right? I didn't even know it. And then one day I said, oh, we're going to go out. Come on, let's go. And he turned around and said, don't bring your other friend. And I said, what do you mean don't bring my other friend?
Yeah.
Of course I'm going to bring her. We're always, we're like a threesome. You know, and she turns around, like Three Musketeers. And he turns around and says, I don't like her. She's manipulative. She manipulates you. I don't want her around. I want to be with you alone. And I was just like, wow, wow, this is insane. So I was caught in this. Now what do I do? How do I say no to her? And you know, meet up with him when I've already agreed to both of them now. And he's saying, no, you're going to have to, I don't want to go with her.
Yeah.
That really tore me apart.
Yeah.
And I lied to her for years. I never told her. Yeah. I never told her that he really, really dislikes her. I never said a word. So that was fascinating, right? So there's a huge conflict. And of course, I have this nature of people pleasing. I trigger people a lot.
Bring that up, yeah.
Yeah, but that, you know, there was this need to please both of them. Yeah. And I couldn't. I couldn't because I knew he was displeased if she was around. And oh my God, and I'm lying to her. It was crazy. When I think about it, crazy making. Yeah, till you realize, no, you just tell the person. All right.
But we just get wrapped up in people pleasing and not wanting to upset people. And it's almost like we get lost in it. It's like, well, where am I in this? What do I want? Who do I want to spend time with?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Like, do I even want to do this?
Yeah.
Do I even want to be with this person? You know, because basically this one individual, you know, here I am lying to her. And later on, I realize she's lying.
Yes.
So our dynamic was to, you know, not really tell the truth about things. Mm-hmm. And when I did tell the truth, like what experiences were difficult for me with her, she just said she doesn't remember.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was so interesting. You have a situation where you were very, very angry with me and you're not telling me why. So eventually I had to dump the relationship because she wouldn't tell me you're angry with me. Mm. Tell me you don't like this. We'll find a solution. Or maybe you just don't like me. That's fine too. You don't like me. It's fine.
Yeah.
You don't want to hang out with me. You don't want to be my friend anymore. That's fine.
That's fine. Yeah.
I prefer to know that than you're coming out with me and you're passive aggressively doing things. And I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
I have no idea what to do if you're passive aggressive. So eventually I'm the one who stopped the relationship.
Mm.
Took me years, though. That's why when I bring up, you know, other people and how many years it takes to even realize we're living in our own prison, because I know I did it. I know I have some now. You know I have my own identification with things. And, you know, the question I asked my mom when I was really young. How can I see what I can't see? You know, so it's always the same question. Of course, there's methodologies now to see what you can't see. Yeah. But you can't always see it before its readiness to arise, right? Yeah. So in the present moment, I'm watching my addiction to work, my addiction to helping people, my addiction to caring, which is very different from compassion. Yeah. So I can see how, in so many ways, I don't have, like you said, where am I in all of this? Well, there's no compassion for that person. Yeah. You know, we say we're going to be compassionate and caring, but if I don't have compassion for myself, what am I doing with the other? I'm usually caring, which has a stickiness, which means somewhere when I'm in the action of caring, when I'm addicted, I'm not talking, you know, everyone out there listening, we're not talking about, okay, somebody gets hurt and you go and care for them. But if somebody gets hurt and you're hurting, or if somebody's drowning, here's a good example. Somebody's drowning and you go to save them. And you, let's say you're standing on a dock and they're drowning and you put out your hand and they grab it.
Yeah.
And they're a little bit crazy, right? At this point, because they're terrified of drowning. They can't swim, or there's a whirlpool that's got them. And they might start to pull you in.
Mm.
Okay, well, what do you do? Because if you keep trying, you might end up in the whirlpool drowning.
Yes.
Which happens quite often if you don't know how to save someone, right? It can be very difficult.
Yeah.
I worked with a client once who was a surfer, and the other person was drowning, and he went to save them, and he couldn't, and they died. They drowned, you know, because they were pulling him under as well. They weren't coming up. So these really, you know, I'm sure we could have some lifeguards telling us how difficult that is. You know, I don't have experience on how to save someone from drowning. So I might punch them in the face and knock them out. That might be the most compassionate action in that moment.
Yeah.
After they might say, oh, you hurt me or whatever. It's like, okay, but take responsibility. Maybe it wasn't the best thing, but it was the only action I could take at the time to save myself, save you. Or I could have just dropped you. You know, that was the, that could be another one where you swim to safety and you drop them. You know, these are difficult moments because we don't know what we do in the moment, first of all. And the other one is, which is compassionate. If I die saving someone else, well, I have no compassion for myself.
Yes.
If they die because they're pulling me under and both of us could die, well, I have compassion for at least one being. It would be the most compassionate action. I'm not saying 100% of the time, please, everyone. I don't know exactly what I do and what would happen. But, you know, knowing that we don't pay attention to ourselves, we often drown with the other.
Mm.
You know, it can be really difficult to deal with someone who's in a loop, right? No matter what action or a sensible action you can give them, they always find justifications for not doing it. And when that happens, you know they're identified. So there's nothing you can do until they're willing to say, I'm ready to stop justifying because I can feel I'm in pain. I know I'm hurting and there must be a better way. So that's what I do when it comes to breakthroughs. Sometimes I do it through tarot. You know, there are ways to show someone how they're identified, and they might break the spell of that identification. But breakthrough's the big one that I do, which is basically Anana Yoga. It's questioning. As you said, we don't question. It's finding those piercing, curious questions an 8-year-old would ask.
Yes.
And eight-year-olds are amazing, right? I'm a bit of a fatty, and I was struggling to get into a seatbelt on an airplane. And this little kid looked at me and he's watching me do this. And he turns around and he says, it's because you're fat. Yeah. And I looked at him and wow, he made that entire deduction in his head.
Yeah.
And really just sat and deduced. And I'm like, yeah, kid, that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are
adorable. Adorable. And quick.
Yes.
They know what we're doing. You know, kids know their parents really well. Really, really well.
Yeah, they know exactly what buttons to press.
What was that?
They know exactly what buttons.
Yes, they do. They do. They know what questions to ask, and usually we dismiss them.
Mm.
Yeah, we say because, or I'm your mom, or I'm your dad, and that's the reason. And we don't sit around and go, wait a minute, this kid's got a good question.
Yeah.
I've had my nephews in some of my group work, and when people struggle with what I'm doing, or the questions I'm asking, or he's often sitting there, especially when he was six, you know, he'd just look and go, what are they talking about? And I just turn and look at this little face that he's making and say, well, what's going on with you that you're wondering what's going on? You look, I don't say anything. I just say, what's going on? And he says, I don't understand what they're talking about. And I say, well, what's your experience? And in this particular incident, we were talking about anger and everybody was just up in arms that anger is bad. And we know in Chinese medicine that anger is the energy of the liver and the gallbladder.
Yeah.
And anger is creative. It's a mover. It moves stuff around our bodies. You know, it's great stuff. Without anger, you know, I kind of imagine if I don't have any anger running through my body, I wouldn't be able to move.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anybody's ever noticed this, but if I've had struggled to move something, an object, a person, if they've fallen down, I was like 6 years old, and my grandpa, he had rheumatoid arthritis and ankylosing spondylitis. So when he would fall down, he couldn't get up. And I was this little tiny kid. Maybe I wasn't six, eight for sure. And he used to call me. He'd say, call Terry Ann, call Terry Ann. And I would go downstairs and usually they'd wake me up. I loved my sleep. So I'd wake up in my sleep and I'd pound downstairs and I'd pick him up.
Yeah.
And then I'd go right back to bed. Yeah. Could be part of the problems I have in my spine now, but anyway. And one day I went to the house and my sister was there and she came to the door crying. I was about 17 years old. So I was much taller than I was at eight. So I was 5'10". You know, I wasn't small. I was a big girl at that point in time. Lots of muscles. I always worked out. And I go inside and I'm like, okay, sweetie, just calm down. I'll go get him. I go to lift him up and I can't. His arms just flop.
Wow.
And I was like, what? What's going on? So I called my dad to come and he says, I can't come. And I said, but he'll have a heart attack down there. I mean, he's just so upset. My mom's like, I can't come. And I got so mad. I slammed down the phone and the anger rose and I went back and I just lifted him up and I went, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. Just 5 minutes before, all I could do was lift his arms. That's it. And then I got angry and lifted him up. And I thought, wow, that little eight-year-old, between 8 and 12, I lifted him up a lot. He was always falling down. My poor grandma, you know, she was older, trying to lift him. I said, always call me. You know, I can't watch you. She had had a hernia. And I was like, no. So anger's great. You know, but we think we should express it by yelling or telling others. No, you don't. Your anger is communicating something to you. Right? It helps us. Yes, it helps us move things, of course, and move ourselves. But it's also a communication process in the body. If something is going on and I feel angry, something inside me is trying to break loose, like these prisons. Maybe my model is bad.
Yeah.
Maybe my model, somewhere in my model, I'm so identified that the anger is coming up trying to break the model. Right? Because you're stuck in this limited model. And let's say some you're having a conversation, a dinner conversation, and we Greeks love having dinner conversations and we argue. But sometimes we're just arguing and I'm not triggered. But sometimes I have been triggered. And usually it's, you come away and go, oh, they're so silly. And why would they think this? And then when you start looking, you go, well, wait a minute, it's you who's limited in your own perspective. And once I realize it's me that's limited in my own perspective and I find my identity. I mean, obviously, I've done, tons of work over the years. So I remember all of this and I see it in other people. And now it's constantly seeking where I'm identified, where are my prisons, and sometimes it's caring, like I'm stuck to caring. And there's an identity of caring. And there's no compassion for myself. None. So if there's no compassion for myself, how would I actually have compassion for the other? Not that that matters so much in the grand scheme of things. Because even a compassionate person, other people might not see them as compassionate. Does that make sense? There's this guy who went to India to follow a teacher. And he was so enamored by this teacher, he went back to California, gave up his family, his job, his home, and flew back to India and said to his teacher, I'm here to follow you. I left everything behind so I could follow you. And he said, go home.
Wow.
Right? So that's compassionate.
Yeah.
But the guy, went around talking about how terrible this teacher was, this guru was. He was just so triggered by it. Meanwhile, it was the thing he needed, that was the most compassionate thing to do.
Yeah.
You followed someone by ruining your family, or I'm not exactly sure, but I can feel, what the results would be. It's like, what are you doing? Why are you destroying your family?
Yeah.
To come out here and follow me? Obviously, you're not learning anything of what I'm doing. You need to take this in your daily life. There was so Gyal Rinpoche. Also, I was, I spent a weekend in one of his 3-day events. And it was just gorgeous, so beautiful. And one woman got up at the end, she said, well, now you're going to leave. It's over. And he said, no, you've got to take this into your life. This isn't separate from your life.
Yeah.
Right? So, again, the compassion. He didn't get up and go, let me help you. Let me show you. No, you stand up and take this in your life. That's compassionate. Not, why I say that is because at the time, I was listening to the questions being asked. I was very young. And I thought, what I would do is get up and help her and show her what to do.
Mm.
And he didn't. He gave it all. And I was like, oh, my God, that's mind blowing. Of course, that's compassionate. That's blowing my mind. Right. Because my addiction was, I better go repeat everything and show exactly what to do from A to Z. And he just said, no, take it in your life. And I went, there you go. There's where my caring is distorted.
Yeah. But I'm just thinking, like, sometimes when I'm teaching, if people get it and make the ahas themselves, they so learn it and ingrain it in instead of me giving it to them.
Well, we can't either. Yeah, that can't even happen. And I can't, make someone have an aha. Like, we're talking now. This is experience of a lifetime. This is very powerful work. I've gone to so many different teachers. I've worked in different elements. This morning I was listening to Alan Watts. Mm. And before I would listen to him, I was, wow. If only. And now when I listen to him, I'm like, yep. Yep. Okay. Yeah. Totally totally get it. Even the philosophies I used to read, and it was hard to read, like Schopenhauer, and I was like, oh yeah, of course, yeah, because you've clarified the filters,
yeah,
and you can see what is, like you said, you can see your model,
yeah.
and it crumbles when you see it. That's an aha, but I can't make that aha moment. I can only put in, let's say, any system that I've ever gone to, I wanted to fully immerse myself in it, right? So it doesn't mean that I would do every single system out there, you know, but when I went into a system, I fully immersed myself in it to know whether it's good or not. Like some students come to different classes I teach, and they'll critique the methodology. And I just sit there and go, I've been doing this for 20, 30 years.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're just going to walk in and critique my methodology, or the methodology that's been created and keeps transforming over and over again. You're just going to say it should be like this and that, when you don't even know how to use it.
Mm.
You don't know how to use the tool.
Yeah.
You haven't even stated that you even understand the tool yet. No, we can't talk about how you're going to change it. And how do I know? Well, what you're suggesting be adopted, mm-hmm. We've tried, right? And it doesn't work. And they'll become very insistent. They'll say, no, you need to learn the system first so you can see that your suggestion doesn't work. We've gone through it, and it doesn't even make sense in relationship to whatever course is going on.
Yeah.
It's just you trying to put your model on when you haven't understood what this model's about. Again, it's really good that you said model. Yeah, it's a great thing, because that model is only useful for a limited or a small perspective of life. Just like some of the different tools I use. You know, tarot has its limitation, breakthrough has its limitation. Even, you know, when I work with breakthrough, I can work with someone a really long time. I have to use different methodology. I can't just use this trade on methodology over and over again. So it becomes modified as the person, breaks through some of their belief systems. So it becomes modified. You know, I might use different exercises for them, or suggest different things, because they're in a different place. So, you know, if you take the course, just like tarot, you take tarot at the beginning, you're going to learn the basics. But as you go along, it's going to keep transforming and changing. So these applications of a beginner coming in suggesting something, and you're like, no, it doesn't even make sense in relationship to what we do here, right? So it's like coming into a kitchen and somebody's cooking and say, well, let's put some nuts and bolts in it.
Yeah.
I'm a construction worker. I want some wood shavings in the souffle. Like, no, that doesn't go here.
Yeah, you could just do that. That'd be great. Thanks. Yeah.
I think we've exhausted the topic for today, but please stay tuned and give us some of your thoughts, because this is a fascinating topic that could go on for hours. And just watch Eloise and I going through our own revelations and insights as we talk about this.
Mm.
Yeah. So thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Yay. Cool. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.